We like to do things by the numbers. We're all about commerce and community. Welcome to The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now for the host that's always on The Upswing, Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Happy Monday to you. Happy Monday to you. So, I stopped at Walgreens on my way in, just grabbed a little thing of Tic Tacs. I don't know, like $2, something like that. But I'm walking past one of the aisles, walking down the aisle. When did Diet Coke 12-packs get to $9.99? Like, I get the Walgreens pricing, but a 12-pack of Diet Coke for $9.99? I mean, I guess it's still only, what, 83 cents a can, but I don't know. So I had to do a little research, and it looks like, I don't know, you can get Diet Coke 12-packs like $7.74 on Amazon, or Meijer has them for like $7.99, but you know, almost 10 bucks for a 12-pack of Diet Coke. Good thing I don't drink a lot of Diet Coke. I don't drink any Diet Coke, but I had to open with that because it was surprising. Anyway, happy Monday. We will do the Monday market preview. Dave Spano, the CEO at Annex Wealth Management, he's on a business trip on a plane this morning. So Brian Jacobson from Annex Wealth Management will join us coming up right after the first break. Speaking of business trips, that is the name of a new book from a well-known name in Milwaukee media, Jesse Garcia. Jesse's going to join us later in the show. And then at the end of the show, I got a bunch of information on who and how we're going to pay for the wildfires in California. The damage, obviously, just so sad, and the photos and the video, just surreal. But I'm going to dive into some of the costs and just kind of go through some of the pillars of payment for the wildfires in California. But first, as we do each and every morning, let's go to Up.
Now it's time for the
two
up on the Upswing.
First up, what is in a name? Stan's Bootery Incorporated has changed its corporate name from Midwest Shoe Merchants, and now the stores, as we all know as Stan's Fit for Your Feet, are now called Stan's Shoes. The change is coming as the family-owned company continues to operate more shoe stores featuring more and more brands across the Midwest. They're eyeing additional growth in the Midwest. The portfolio of stores under Stan's Bootery prompted the members of the family-owned business to change the company name. The company is celebrating its 75th year in business, so Stan's Bootery Inc. will now be known as Midwest Shoe Merchants. The ad agency locally, Kramer Krasselt, was consulted and did a lot of the work on the branding of the name change. Store remodels are planned for 2025, and they'll update the branding, the design, a new color palette, some new paint and carpeting, and just do a brand refresh, obviously, with the new corporate name. Next up, what's in your lemonade? Robots? Yeah, possibly. Have you had the lemonade at Chick-fil-A? It's pretty good stuff. Kind of classic lemonade, just three ingredients. It's all real lemon juice, not from concentrate, and then cane sugar and water. A medium is about $2.75, 270 calories, but it does come with a whopping 63 grams of sugar. So you got to look out for it. But right now, at their California stores, Chick-fil-A is squeezing 2,000 lemons a day. It was just really painful for staff at the Chick-fil-A in California. So the plant just north of Los Angeles is now using robots to squeeze as many as 1.6 million pounds of fruit with hardly any human help. The facility, larger than the average Costco store at about 190,000 square feet, then ships the bags of juice to Chick-fil-A locations where the workers add the water and the sugar and whip up the trademark lemonade. Pretty cool to see this innovation. Squeezing the lemons was a tedious task that added 10,000 hours of work in the California area. So now replacing, you know, not necessarily entirely replacing the humans, but the robots are now squeezing all the lemonade to get our wonderful Chick-fil-A lemonade. Lemons to lemonade. Community to commerce. That's what we do each and every day on The Upswing. Coming up next, economics with Brian Jacobson, the chief economist at Annex Wealth Management. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Happy Monday. Dave Spano on a business trip on an airplane this morning, so it's a pleasure to be joined by Brian Jacobson, the chief economist at Annex Wealth Management. Brian, happy Monday to you.
Yes, happy Monday to you as well.
Of course. I got to ask you this Diet Coke question quick. As I said in the opening, I'm walking through Walgreens this morning, $9.99 for a 12-pack of Diet Coke. What? Give us the economic analysis there. Like, have you seen a rise in the soda prices lately?
Yeah, I have actually. And, you know, a lot goes into that, of course. I mean, you've got the aluminum cans, and we have to pay attention to what's going on with the commodity markets there, all the inputs into it. And plus, consider where you were as well. Is it the same price there? They might charge a little premium for the convenience of buying it at Walgreens as opposed to if you go to a Walmart or a Target or, you know, maybe better yet, a Costco.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And it's always that kind of complex interplay between economic indicators and monetary policy and market sentiment, for sure. And I think we saw that last week with the labor market, right? I mean, does a strong labor market with a strong jobs report impact what the Fed's monetary decision is going to be? And what do you think, as we're a week away from inauguration, I mean, what do you think incoming President Trump thinks about the jobs report from last week?
Yeah, I was hoping that he would have put something out on social media about some sort of reaction to it, but I didn't see anything.
No,
he does tend to wear his heart out on his sleeve a little bit. But I think it is a little difficult to say that he's inheriting a horrible economy when you have that 256,000 number. Now, keep in mind, though, a lot of that strength did come from government hiring and healthcare, which aren't exactly the most economically sensitive parts of the economy. And when we look at manufacturing, that still is shutting jobs. So from the macro picture, it's hard to say things are going badly, but everybody's micro economy could be very different. Will this affect the Fed? You know, they probably liked this report because they aren't really that worried about a strong labor market fanning the flames of inflation anyways, because there just isn't a lot of evidence to say that a strong labor market does cause inflation. It tends to be too loose of monetary policy, too loose of fiscal policy, supply chain shocks, things like that. And so it does mean that they can take their time. They can cut back on the pace of rate cuts or just be on sort of this pregnant pause for a while, which is probably what the market is pricing in.
Does a declining unemployment put additional inflation at risk or more in focus, if you will?
It does put it more in focus, and I think that's what the market was reacting to, and that's where we have to look at what does the market do versus what is the Fed likely to do. Because, you know, good news can be good news. It can also be bad news if it means that the Fed is likely going to make a mistake. I think the Fed is just going to look through this and say, you know what, it's fine. Let's just focus on inflation. But the market, you know, you saw yields move up, stock prices go down. A lot of that was because there is that lingering fear that the strong labor market, low unemployment rate could make it more difficult to hit that 2% inflation target over time.
Yeah, and the jobs report, I think, is also kind of fueled a Wall Street fear of kind of a lose-lose market scenario. What are some of the strategies, and you put it perfectly, there's micro and there's macro, but what are some of the strategies that investors can adopt in this potential kind of new scenario we're in?
Yeah, it is going to cause, I think, some what's sometimes called cognitive dissonance, where you see, oh, it's good news, but the market's down, right? So how can good news be bad news? And it's mainly because there's the fear that the Fed is going to do something to mess things up. But they don't seem inclined to hike rates. So as long as they keep talking about, you know, we're just going to pause, I think we're going to recover from this, it'll be fine. But one of the best things people can probably do is just look at their portfolio and make sure that it's aligned with their long-term goals. And part of that is to make sure that you are managing liquidity properly, meaning that if you have certain financial obligations coming due within the next month, the next year, even the next year and a half, don't necessarily have that tied up in the stock market, because you know you can have great years like we did in 2023 and 2024, but then you can also have a bad year, and you don't want that money to be at risk if it's to meet some short-term obligation. So I think that this is a great opportunity to assess that liquidity picture. Do you have enough stashed away in like money markets, savings accounts, things that are very liquid where you can be assured that you are going to have that money available to you if you do have some sort of expenditure coming up? You know, if you, one of the mantras I use is, if you can't afford to lose your shirt, don't bet your shirt.
That's good. We are talking with Brian Jacobson at NX Wealth Management. When we come back, actually a great question coming in from the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. That's 855-616-1620. A question for Brian. Will the California fires, in quotes, fuel inflation in construction, remodeling, and insurance? Inflation fears in the news cycle for sure. We'll get to that right after this break. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined today by Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management. So, Brian, as we look at inflation, is there a psychological impact on consumer behavior and economic confidence? And how will that work into inflation fears with construction and rebuilding, especially in the devastation in California?
Yeah, that devastation in California is just heart-wrenching to see. Yeah. And some of the estimates, they range anywhere from, you know, like $20 billion up to almost $200 billion, depending upon what you want to include in that calculation. Just looking at some back-of-the-envelope calculations for to rebuild, let's say with the home construction that might need to take place, if there's about $20 billion increase there, you know, consider that last year lumber sales in the U.S. were around $240 billion. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden you would have like this 10% increase, and that could affect, you know, lumber prices, construction prices, things along those lines. Anytime we get these natural disasters, you do tend to see some sort of economic effect there across the economy. Now, in terms of some of the psychology, you know, if people think inflation is going to rise, that can oftentimes encourage them to spend more today rather than tomorrow, since prices might be higher in the future. And so that in itself can make inflation almost a self-fulfilling expectation. It's one of the reasons why the Federal Reserve, they really do focus on inflation expectations. What are people thinking inflation might be? So last Friday, we got that University of Michigan consumer sentiment report out. And one of the questions they ask in there is about people's expectations for inflation over the next 5 to 10 years. And that went up to about 3.3%, which is the highest that it's been since 2008. So unfortunately, inflation expectations are on the rise again here.
Is there a sweet spot for inflation that maximizes economic growth?
Yeah, you know, there's almost a sweet range as far as some of the estimates here. It can go anywhere from like 2% to 4% is kind of based on the data, just looking at other countries, trying to figure out, you know, their growth rates, what was their inflation, and what can really be almost that target. And for many central banks, they have adopted 2% as the inflation target. That started with the Central Bank of New Zealand, actually in the 1990s. They're the ones who were the first ones to have that inflation target. And other countries have just kind of followed suit, saying, yeah, that sounds pretty good, because it gives them some flexibility in terms of cutting rates if they need to, increasing rates. Now, I think there's quite a few people who would say, well, why not 0% inflation, right? Yeah. I mean, do we need it? You have in the Federal Reserve's mandate from Congress, it says that they are supposed to target stable prices, not stable inflation. And so I think some people would argue, is what would be wrong with 0% inflation instead?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I want to get your input quickly here on your favorite business book. Our next author has a new book called The Business Trip. And there's so many business books out there, especially beginning of the year. There's always a bunch of new ones that come out and you're like, oh, I got to read that. from your lens, what are the favorites that are on your list, Brian?
All right. One of my favorites is The Travels of a T-Shirt in the Global Economy. Mm. It's by Petra Rivoli. Okay. It traces the life cycle of a simple T-shirt from the cotton fields of Texas to manufacturing in China and then back to the United States. It's a really fascinating journey just to show how interconnected this world is. So that would probably be my top one because it's an easy read. Uh-huh. It's also quite enlightening.
Yeah. Have you ever read Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes, I have. Yeah, very good. He's actually an excellent blogger as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would put that on my list, and I'd give that book to a lot of people. I think the genius in that book is that he really connects finance to what we are talking about, human psychology, and blends Absolutely. The two really well together. All right, Brian, I appreciate your time. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Coming up next, Jesse Garcia has a new book out called The Business Trip. We're going to talk about her journey as an author in the Milwaukee market. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Jesse Garcia, not only an award-winning sports journalist, but she's risen through the ranks of television news, first as an anchor reporter, then and now newsroom management as a news director at CBS 58. But I think her authorship, like putting pen to paper and creating a couple of the books that she's written, not only her My Life with the Green and Gold, Tales from Her 20 Years of Sports Casting, is a wonderful read and a truly unique lens into the life of a sports reporter. But her new book is called The Business Trip, and it's a novel. So I wanted to talk to Jesse about not only her new book, but specifically the plot and the process. So, Jesse, I appreciate you taking time on this wonderful Monday and being here in studio.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a pleasure.
Indeed. So what inspired the plot of your new novel? I'm sure, like, as an author, you have all these ideas up in the air. How do you drill down and say, all right, this is the one I'm going to tackle?
So let me just say, I was a nonfiction author, as you mentioned, and I never thought I could write fiction. I always thought to myself, I can't even make up a name, let alone a plot. And then I took a prompt class where they send you a prompt to kind of get you going. It can be a photo or a song lyric or just anything like that. And then you write 1,000, 1,500 words. You send it back for review. It was out of a writer's group in Waukesha. And it was an online prompt class. And that kind of got my creative fiction juices going.
Okay.
So this is actually the fourth novel that I've written, but the first one that sold.
Okay.
The first three I look back as sort of my practice novels. And I actually went several years. So I wrote three of them. Two of them were thrillers. Tried to sell them. They didn't really get anywhere. And then I went several years because I got the job at CBS 58 as the news director. I was extremely busy. I still am. And I didn't really have time to work on another novel. But then 2 years ago, almost exactly, I went on a business trip. And on that trip, the idea for this novel came into my head.
Okay.
And I thought, I'm going to just try writing this, see where it goes.
So do you develop the characters first or the plot or what's the actual process?
Yeah.
Putting pen to paper.
It's a really good question. Every book is a little bit different. This one was plot and setting. So I thought of it when I was in an airport and you know, part of this takes place on an airplane and a couple of different women from different walks of life who are on the plane together. And so first came that, then I had to sort of build the characters around the plot and then try to propel it forward. So that's the way this one came to be, but they're all a little bit different. And sat down, put pen to paper, and I'm what they call a pantser as opposed to a plotter.
Right.
So pantsers, we write by the seat of our pants. We just see where it takes us.
I am taking copious notes as you speak because I think like everyone, we all have books in our mind that we want to write, but we got to get to, you know, what is the process? How do you take time out of each day and how do you move it forward strategically? So how long did it take you to write this book from the initial idea to the final draft?
You know, the first draft was probably only like 4 or 5, maybe 6 months. And then I had been in touch with an agent previously. We came close on one of my other books, but we didn't get over the hump. And I wrote her back and I said, I've just written, you haven't heard from me in years, but I just wrote another one that I think has some promise. Would you like to take a look at it and be the first? Mm-hmm. And she did. And then from there, she and a fellow agent that she had in her agency worked with me on some revisions. And then when we sold it to St. Martin's Press, the editor there worked with me on a lot of revisions. So the whole process took about a year mm-hmm. until it was ready to go into copy edits and, you know, everything else that sort of the final draft mm-hmm. gets to.
All right. We're talking with Jessi Garcia. Her new book is The Business Trip, a novel. When we come back, I want to dive into a little bit more of the plot so you get a sense of what the book's all about. And then further advice for the business aspects for aspiring authors. Again, everyone's got a book in their head, but taking the time and the process to get there, it's a lot of work, but with a little persistence and passion, I'm sure we can all get there. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Jessi Garcia's first thriller is called The Business Trip. It's a quote, I saw one of the reviews, a twisty novel where nothing is as it seems as it descends into the depths of the master manipulator's mind. That is, I like that. Like, whoa, all right. Let me get to Amazon or wherever and buy that book now. Talk a little bit more about the plot, Jessi, for us, please.
Yeah, it's about two women who get on an airplane. They're from different walks of life. One of them is a news director. I kind of knew that
world.
And the other one is running from an abusive relationship. So actually, it opens with her. It opens with Jasmine, who's leaving her abusive boyfriend and trying to escape. I set it in Madison. Okay. So it starts in Wisconsin, and then the trip goes, they're on a flight to Denver. And then one of them has a connection to San Diego for her business trip. And then the plot kind of travels around the U.S. after that. So things start to happen. It's told from multiple point of views. It actually has 10 point of views, which is unusual. And for the audiobook, they hired 10 different voice actors to do all these different points of view. But it's so you meet the women, they go on the plane, and then part two, you start seeing their friends and family getting these strange texts from them, and they're both talking about the same man and that they met. And the friends and family are trying to piece together what's going on, just as the reader's trying to piece together what's going on.
All right. That's interesting. We were talking over the break just about your process of writing, your day job, obviously really busy. You work in media and news, like there's a lot going on. How do you create that time and process in your day to write the book?
Yeah, I really only write on weekends, you know, the occasional weeknight. But I do have a very busy job, which I love. And I need to devote all my time and energy to being the news director at CBS 58, Telemundo, Wisconsin. And when I get home, you know, I don't have the mental capacity to dive into the book most nights. So I save it up for the weekend. So I kind of, you know, think about different things I might want to do. And then come the weekend, when I'm excited about a book, I will wake up at 5 a.m. I will just write for probably 5 hours. You know, by 10 a.m., I'll take a break. I'll take a nap. And then sometimes if I'm really into the book, I will continue writing, you know, after the nap. You know, I always tell people I do writing the way others do any hobby. Cooking, gardening, sewing, painting. I don't do any of those things. My kids will tell you I have absolutely no skills or hobbies other than writing.
I like that. That's a good strategy. I'm going to use that, too. I'm not doing the lawn today. Right. I'm going to be in my office writing my book.
That's exactly it.
So as you look at the kind of the agent publisher marketing around a book, what does that look like when you need to promote and drive sales? How does that look like from your author seat?
Yeah, it is a very interesting process when you sign with one of those big New York publishing houses. So they really kind of take over a lot of the publicity and marketing. So really, there's not a ton that I need to do in terms of like soliciting, you know, interviews or things like that. Like they will reach out to newspapers and radio stations and try to get you into different things. And then but you need to be available and accountable, you know, to do things. We have the launch tomorrow. So, you know, I've been doing some promotion on that. I have an author Instagram. I've got my professional Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, putting things out there, trying to get the word out there. If anybody's interested in joining us, 6:30 p.m. at Boswell Books tomorrow night.
Very good. And that's kind of a traditional author visit, one-on-one interview about the book and the process.
Yeah, so I will do a presentation that will last about an hour, and then you can purchase books. You can I will autograph them if anybody would like them signed. There'll be plenty of time for Q&A. I'll play actually part of the audio book, just a little snippet of that, so you can hear one of the voices of the 10 POVs. And yeah, great thing to do on a cold winter's night. We have over 100 people already signed up, but there's plenty of space. So lots of room for anybody else who'd like to join us tomorrow night at Boswell on Downer Avenue.
Very good. Jesse Garcia's first novel is A Business Trip. Twisty novel with lots of twists and turns. She'll be at Boswell Books on one of my favorite streets in the city, Downer Avenue. So much happening there. So much opportunity. The bookstores, a bunch of great restaurants, brand new Starbucks that was just remodeled that's attached to Boswell. Jesse, I appreciate your time this morning. All the best with the book. And thanks for the little inspiration, too. I'm going to make sure I move my book deal forward this year.
I can't wait to see your book. So thanks for having me, Jeff.
All right. Very good. You're listening to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. If you are able, please help the people affected by the California wildfires. Donate at redcross.org/ESPN. Redcross.org/ESPN to help the Red Cross respond and help people recover. So let's continue talk on California and the rebuild that's, you know, probably still a ways off as the fires continue to burn. But you got to think, you know, who is going to pay to rebuild California when insurance falls short? The wildfires are without a doubt presenting a complex challenge that requires collaboration between the insurers and the regulators and policymakers. So finding that balance between affordable coverage and sustainable business practices for insurance is going to be crucial ensuring long-term stability of the state's property insurance market. California's insurance regulations now, especially Proposition 103, have created a complex environment for insurers. Now, the law requires state approval for rate increases, often leading to prolonged battles between insurers and regulators. And this has resulted in a bunch of insurers feeling unable to price their policies accurately for the current risk landscape. So who is going to pay? I just wanted to go through kind of the different scenarios when we're looking at the rebuild. Insurance claims should cover about $20 billion of the fire's losses. This is according to JP Morgan Chase and their estimates. And then you have FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, that helps pay for temporary shelter and supplies and other needs for assistance for disasters. The agency caps total payouts for housing assistance at $43,600 per person or per household and can provide up to the same amount for other needs. And number three, as you're looking at the rebuild in California, Uncle Sam, of course, can help with more emergency assistance, but the newly seated majority Republican Congress is going to have to authorize additional aid. And then finally, when insurance doesn't cover all the losses, homeowners are usually stuck with the remaining bill. And you look at kind of after the 2021 Marshall Fire that swept through the suburbs between Denver and Boulder, a study found there that 36% of the homeowners who filed insurance claims learned that their policies covered less than three quarters of their home's replacement costs. So it's a good time, and I'm hoping to have the Wisconsin Red Cross on later this week, but a good time without a doubt. And I know we feel a little isolated in terms of disaster here in the Midwest, but it's a good time to look at our current policies and to go through what is covered and what is not in the event of a disaster. For too long, you pay the premiums and you don't look at the policy, whether it's flooding or fire or tornado, whatever that disaster is, you got to make sure that you're covered and that you're properly priced for that coverage. So if I can give you a, kind of an upswing suggestion for the week, call your insurance agent. Make sure that your home policy has everything you need and that you're properly covered in the event of a disaster. Quickly, maybe I'll save a little bit of this for later in the week, but I had a great, great burger this weekend. It was my wife and I celebrating our 22nd wedding anniversary. We went to Birch in downtown Milwaukee, sat at the bar, and had a burger. Because at Birch, you can only order the burger in the bar. People are like, well, what's a burger going to cost at a high-end restaurant in Milwaukee? $19. $19 for one of the best burgers I've ever had. And it came with this side of homemade German potato salad. So I just got to put this out there. You're going to be willing to spend $19 for a burger. Get to Birch in downtown Milwaukee, just off of Water Street there, next to the big Mandel developments, right outside of Schlitz Park. $19 burger. That was just absolutely incredible.
These are your business headlines from the Milwaukee Business Journal.
Automotive battery giant Clarios International of Glendale drops plans for an IPO and decides to issue debt of up to $4.5 billion. Some of the proceeds provide cash to shareholders. Milwaukee area shoe retailers Stan's Fit for Your Feet renames its stores Stan's Shoes. The corporate name switches from Stan's Bootery to Midwest Shoe Merchants as they target growth in the region. Kohler, Wisconsin Resort hires James Beard Award-winning C.J. Cooper as culinary director for food outlets including Immigrant Restaurant, Wisconsin Room, and Horse and Plow. I'm Rich Kirchen with MilwaukeeBusinessJournal.com on 620 WTMJ.